You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my XNO work for Inside the Pylon. Follow my draft and fantasy work for BreakingFootball.com. Follow me on Twitter, if you dare, at MichaelKistNFL. As always, I am joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDTScouting.com. is where he does his draft work. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak, S-O-L-A-K. He's a much nicer follow. Ben, How you doing, brother?
2 days, Michael Kist. I am traveling home. You're listening to this Friday. I'm traveling home on Friday. Be home for the weekend. Going to do some excellent grilling, some nice cooking. And we're 2 days away, man. And I got to say, I'm kind of ready for it, Mike. I'm very ready to watch this game. It's going to be a good time. Let me know if this is happening to you. I'm curious, because you're in Florida. You're also in a non-Philadelphia location. Weeks 1 through 18 of the football season, so like up through the divisional round, I live in Chicago. It's very cold. I have an Eagles hat, like a nice little beanie from the NFL shop that I wear everywhere, and then a matching scarf as well. Very nice scarf, and I wear them every day, right? And whatever talk, nobody comes out to me. UChicago is not a school known for its sports interest or anything like that. So nobody, nothing, right? It has been so frustrating these past 2 weeks to come. Well, these people who I see like every week come up to me like, oh, like Eagles are doing good. Like, yes, they are. But you don't get to talk to me about that because we have not. No, that you don't get to be with me at my NFC championship game if you're not with me at my like week 12, week 13, Carson right. Wentz gets injured nonsense, okay? I feel very strongly about this. I don't know if that happens to you, because I wear Eagles gear every day, not like trying to, you know, humble brag or anything. I just do because it's cold. That's my hat. You know what I mean?
I get nothing but Eagles trash talk thrown my way, and I throw it right back at them. I think that's part of it, too. With all these Bucks fans down here, oh, we closed down the vet and blah, blah, blah. It's nonsense. So I hit them with pure football knowledge, and they tend to either shrink or we end up having an engaging conversation, which is pretty much how my Twitter experience is as well. So my Twitter experience is Florida from an Eagles fan perspective. That's kind of how that goes.
No, I don't know. It's obviously very elitist of me and very smug, and I probably shouldn't be that way. But I do wish I could wear a sign that's like, I am a very intense fan. I am not a casual fan. Please do not come up to me with casual fan conversations. I can't pretend to be a casual fan for that long. You know what I mean?
I can't stand Homer talk. That's what I don't like. Like when I go out to bars and people try to talk football and I can realize like within the first minute, like this is not a conversation I feel like having because I'm not going to get anything out of this. Right. And not to be like a jerk or anything like that. But at the same time, I could be talking football with someone on Twitter that's much smarter than me. I could be talking with you. I'd much rather do that.
Oh, thanks, Mike. I'd rather talk with you too.
So what we're going to do today, since we've done a lot of analysis, maybe over-analysis at this point, rather than breaking down a bunch of X and O stuff, I do have something quick on that. We are going to talk about some of the stories that have been going around this news cycle, this time of year, seeing what's true, what's false, what to take stock in, what matters, what doesn't. First, we'll talk with some of that quick film talk. I was watching the Super Bowl from last year just to kind of prep for an article that I'm writing that's going to talk about the use of the running backs in the Patriots passing game and how that can offset the pass rush, the concepts that they use, things of that nature. One thing I noticed right out of the gate in the first quarter, they must have run, I don't know, 8 or 9 wheels out of the backfield with their running back, with James White and Deion Lewis, like right out of the gate. So they really tried to test teams vertically, one-on-one with the linebacker, with the running back. So we're going to have to hold up in that situation. Without going into too much detail as well, a reminder that James White had 16 targets, 14 catches, including a swing pass that was technically counted as a run. So he was an integral part of their game plan. I feel like that could be the same thing on Sunday. And again, without going into too much detail, the piece will be up on LockedOnEagles.com. Go check it out in the next couple of days. But one thing I did see towards the end of the game when they were setting up for that last score is they ran that Haas concept that me and Mark Schofield and you have talked about on this show, where you have 4 wide, 2 and 2, and on the outside you've got those quick hitches, and then from the slot you've got those seam routes, those vertical seam routes. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they got James White isolated on a linebacker, and with that concept, the running back has 3 different options. He can return, run, or sit, meaning he can continue on his path to the left as he kind of angles it, depending on the leverage of the linebacker. He can kick it out to the right, or he can sit in that soft zone if the linebacker is giving him too much cushion. That is something that if Nigel Bradham or Michael Kendricks are in for, they have to be able to stick with him, because he is going to, James White is going to try to manipulate them based on their leverage, and then they're going to have to make sure that they secure the tackle as well. Are you pretty confident that Bradham and Kendricks will do well if put in that position on an island when James White has that many options?
I'm confident one of them will do well. The other one Which is one? Named Michael Kendricks. Now, Nigel Bradham, who somebody just wrote a fantastic piece about Nigel Bradham. I can't remember who it is. Bradham, and just incredibly versatile, incredibly dynamic, and I've been pounding this table for the past 2 years. One of the best coverage linebackers that we've got in the league, period. And he's a fantastic coverage linebacker for the Eagles. Now, they have to make sure he's in that spot, because Nigel obviously has to move around a lot because of the Jordan Hicks injury, as we've discussed. Michael Kendricks, on the other hand, is not as good in coverage. Kendricks tends to be very hot and cold in coverage. Like, he'll have good games where he covers very well, and then he'll have other games where he's jumping in shadows. So you do worry about that a little bit, obviously. Yeah, I'll put it to you this way. Like, the Patriots, you know, consistently pass very well to their running backs. They do that with exceptional frequency. You know, they're known for doing it more often than most teams, and with success. I'm okay with that. Right, this Eagles secondary has only really struggled when it gives up huge passing plays, and when I think of the huge passing play threats for the Patriots, it's usually not like James White, Deion Lewis. These guys are stick movers, right? If they're not, you know, feeding Brandon Cooks down the sideline with speed, if he's not consistently winning there, nor if Gronk is ripping off, like, you know, 20-yard catches with 30-yard, you know, tackle-breaking monstrosity King Kong nonsense, I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Like we talked about it with Mark Schofield on the two crossovers past. These teams are going to move the ball on each other, right? Limiting big plays, creating turnovers, winning in the red zone, that's going to be the reality. It's going to be the backbreaker for these defenses.
Yeah, and was that piece from The Athletic by any chance, by Bo Wolf?
Yes,
the
unsung hero, Nigel Bradham. It was Bo Wolf, the unsung hero, Nigel Bradham. Love Bo Wolf.
Very nice. Go check that piece out at theathletic.com.
A lot of good pieces have been written this week, man. It's been incredible to watch.
My favorite so far has been the Robert Klemko from Sports Illustrated about Doug Peterson's rise. Mm-hmm. The headline is, Doug Peterson has already won an underdog Super Bowl, and it was in high school for him. His third year in high school, going up against a team that has dogged them and that program for years, basically started the program anew with one of the Booty kids from, you know, mm-hmm. you may remember John David Booty, the quarterback from USC. Really, the quotes that got me, this is the one that got me, and this is about one of the guys talking about Peterson there, going into the game against Evangel, who is their rival. Quote, "We were all really worked up that whole week, but Coach Peterson was just so composed. I never saw him get overly boosted or get outside what the channel of focus was. He was a real grounding factor. He's a guy that's so easy to be around. He helps the nerves calm down. He establishes trust and instills confidence. None of us were overly nervous because we were so prepared." How well does that translate to the situation we're in now? You know what I mean? That calming presence. He's just a dude doing dude things. Like, he never seems to get too high or too low. I think that's going to be gigantic for this team.
Yeah, and that kind of story right there is put up in conjunction with the piece that Peter King did, also on Monday Morning Quarterback with Sports Illustrated, where he kind of just like took a morning ride with Peterson to the facilities. Like, you know, Peterson's getting there at like 5:30 or some nonsense, and just like talked to them for that period of time. And then also, like, he had a bit of a storyline about Peterson backing up Favre, who obviously Favre's coming to speak to the Eagles on Sunday before the game. He's kind of that big speaker they're bringing in. Right. But in that piece, Peter King, King asks Peterson, you know, Belichick's on the other sideline. What does that mean? And Peterson essentially responded with nothing. It doesn't, you know, like, I have a job to do. It's to beat the opponent. I don't really care who the opponent is. You know, I'm preparing my team. You know, he asked him, how many times has Belichick's name been brought up? And Peterson said zero. Like, we haven't said his name. We don't say the opposing coach's name at all, which I love, right? And even more than I love it, I buy it. You know,
right.
I'm sure Bill Belichick's name has probably been mentioned because, like, it's hard not to say it. Like, it's not taboo. Like, this is not a game.
Right.
At the same time, like, not only do I really appreciate that sentiment, I also do firmly believe it. Like, you know, firstly, Peterson has had incredible success so far in his second season. Here's a fun stat for you, Mike. The last time a coach had a losing season his first season and then brought his team to the Super Bowl the next season was Bill Belichick's first Super Bowl win.
Correct.
In 2001, 2002 with the Patriots. right? Yeah. So, 16 years, it's not a long. I'm sure it's happened before in history, but it hasn't happened since Belichick did it, which is really interesting. So Peterson's clearly doing something right. And I think a lot of it, yeah, has to go to, you know, what's being written about by a lot of different people who have this access, because we don't have this access, right? And a lot of people who are writing about this are saying, you know, Peterson is agnostic to circumstance, right? Which is huge, huge, huge as the head coach. Because he's not going to get too big for his britches. He's not going to get out of his head. And he's not going to try to do something that he's not supposed to do. I know we were talking about this off air. I know you haven't read this piece yet. Eric Edholm, Pro Football Weekly, did a little profile on Mac Hollins, right? You know, because Mac's been spending the past 2 weeks, if you don't know, during media week, he's had a Rubik's Cube the whole time, right? And he's just been like spinning it and solving it while he's talking to people. And so Edholm started asking him about just like his quirks and whatever. And it was a really cute piece. It was a lot of fun. Like, you know, Hollins is a great dude. But Hollins dropped this little nugget that he heard from like Torrey Smith and LeGarrette Blount and other guys who've kind of been here before. He said, you know, they told me, don't try to do something different since it's the Super Bowl. Do what you've done. Make plays. Right. Play the game. Mm-hmm. And then if it happens, it happens. You know, like if you're Edholm brought up like Jermaine Kearse and like David Tyree and these guys who've made incredible Super Bowl plays. And Hollins said they were making plays all season. They just got the opportunity in the Super Bowl and they just did what they've already done, right? So it's very much, you know, it's not too big for the Eagles. It's not too shocking, you know, this whole being in the Super Bowl, the young team with a lot of rookies, a lot of inexperienced guys leading them. It's not throwing them off. And it's really, really cool to see.
Yeah. And another part about that Klemko piece that was funny to me, because we give credit to Peterson so much for his play calling, his preparation and whatnot. He was all over that article, the way he prepares, watches film, gets guys prepared, makes sure that they know what he wants to attack. And at the end of the game, when they're going to win the game, before the game, he had told them, if you get this matchup, if you get this cornerback in this situation, we need to attack him. And they didn't get that situation until the very last scoring play, where they had their best receiver where they wanted him and they designed a route for him. But they had got on the left side, they had gotten the exact matchup they wanted. Quarterback throws him a quick hand signal because Peterson trusted him to make that adjustment as a senior quarterback in high school. He makes the adjustment on the route. They win it. They win the game. Excellent, excellent stuff. I know there was another story that you wanted to get into, and that was the Wickersham story about Tom Brady.
Well, I'm curious now that we're kind of at this point, because I don't know how much we talked about it when it came out. You know, we weren't really saying, oh, maybe we'll see the Patriots in the Super Bowl at that time. Yeah. So we had a lot of other stuff we were talking about, because that was close to the Wentz injury. Obviously, it's going to be a very concerted effort by the Patriots brass to present a very united front for this week. There's no reason, like the last thing you would want is to dredge up this report and this potential issue right before your team's about to play in the Super Bowl, right? That'd be priority one. I don't know if it were I making these decisions. So, you know, we haven't heard too much, too many questions about it, because I don't think they're going to be very fruitful. And that which we've heard, you know, the Patriots have kind of rebuffed right away. But I'm just curious, we're kind of at this point right now. Let's say Patriots are in their eighth Super Bowl under Brady Belichick. They've won five and they've lost two. The only two they've lost have both been to the Giants. Let's say they lose, God willing, to the upstart Philadelphia Eagles with their backup quarterback Nick Foles and this young head coach Doug Peterson, right? Let's say the Eagles' defense harasses Brady. Let's say Brady turns in his worst Super Bowl performance of all eight of his, right? Let's say the Eagles generate a lot of pressure on him, which people are anticipating could be the case. And listen, 40 is 40 no matter which way you slice it. Getting hit a lot hurts, and especially when you've been doing it for 18 years, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say Brady looks beaten up at the end of this game. What do we do? Do we, like, I don't want to say it out loud. It feels like Beetlejuice. Like, do we think something happens? Like, I'll give you the flip side. Let's say they all win the Super Bowl. It's amazing. What, do they all both retire together? Like, what is it? That's the only happy ending. I don't see how they lose this Super Bowl and then come out the end of it with, we're both coming back next year and it's going to be amazing again. Yippee-ki-yay, right? Like, that's so much of the
future of the legacy.
Right, and like there's a big fork in the road after the Super Bowl for this storyline, because if they lose and like Brady looks amazing and they lose, whatever. Let's say they lose and like Brady looks bad, right? Mm. There's no way we spend an entire offseason not talking about that at least once a week. We have nothing else to talk about, right? Yeah. And so I don't know. To me, like because that Wickersham article came out, things are very primed to get very funky in New England on the condition that they lose this game.
Here's the thing for me. It's so hard for me to read that story, trust what's being said, because, and I've said this before on Twitter, but the sources, the quote-unquote sources that come out of New England seem just as untrustworthy as the sources that come out of the Cleveland Browns organization around draft time. Just as untrustworthy as the Cowboys sources that had that judge as a source and then she went rogue and you know, had that ruling against Ezekiel Elliott. I have such a hard time trusting that anything of value is coming out of that building that has like real factual backing to it. And I understand that there might be some issues between them. But I think I heard John Barchard say this the other day. When the Venn diagram comes together, Brady and Belichick all want the same thing. And it's a major part of what they want. And that's to win. However, if Brady does look bad, I'm going to go the other way. And I'm going to say they get right back on the grind. And people write about it all offseason. And the Patriots shut it out and they see what they can do, because it's not like Brady hasn't looked fantastic this entire season. One bad game doesn't mean that he's...
Do you think he has looked on Brady level for the entire season?
I'm not going to say like peak Brady level. I'm going to say he's a darn good quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, right. Even Drew Brees didn't look like peak Drew Brees, but he's still a very effective quarterback that you can win with, that's going to take you to a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? There's levels to it for sure. But it wasn't like Peyton Manning, where you knew he was struggling all season and needed like a wood chipper defense to get him there, where they could survive benching him and putting in Brock Osweiler and all that stuff. That's not this type of team. It's not that type of defense. I still think they just go right back to work, man. And it's going to be the most perplexing thing for everybody. But I think they have that ability to shut things out. I don't know how much stock to put into the rumor that there is a split there for them. So until I see something that I can grab onto, I have an issue buying it.
Also, I'll put it to you this way. Number one, I think even if the split does not yet exist, a split is inevitably coming, because you can't be as forward-thinking and meticulous and strategic as Belichick. And right. Have a quarterback as old as Brady and not be planning for life without him.
Right.
And then tag with that the fact that Brady has no conception of the Patriots without him, right? Like Brady, right. You know, he said, like, why does everybody want me to retire, right? Like, Belichick cannot help but plan for the future without Brady. Brady cannot help but insist he will be there. So that's a friction. That's a conflict. And even if it's not a problem now, I think it's eventually going to be. And
right.
To me, there's no benefit for quote-unquote sources, actual human beings, I'm assuming they exist, talking about that. Like, you know, like, they're, like the whole, like, oh, like, this is only going to make the Patriots stronger. The Patriots needed to be made stronger, so they leaked a story? Like, what did the Patriots need to be made stronger? They're the perennial number one seed in the AFC. They didn't need bulletin board material. This is Belichick.
Yeah, but you know what? People around it that don't get the kind of access that they want, maybe a little more loose-lipped than the people that really matter that don't leak anything. I don't know, man. I just don't buy that anything squeaks through a door crack in that building. You get what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Tight-lipped about everything.
No, I hear you.
And you can tell, like, and when anything, even just the small things come out, you can tell how irritated Belichick is that he has to answer to it. It's just not them. And if there is something to it and I'm wrong, hey, cool. You know what I mean? That's goodbye to that dynasty. And it's the start of the Eagles dynasty. You know what
facts,
I mean?
Right. I will say, like, the one thing is, like, you have some sources that are saying, like, you know, Brady said this, Belichick said this, Guerrero said this, or whatever. You have other sources who are saying, I've been in this locker room for 10 years and it feels different. Right. And, like, to me, those are like, you know, that's just my experience. And, like, I hear those. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, those can be, like, a little bit reinforced and nudged because of questioning
right.
and, like, what the topic
context,
matter is. But still, like, you know, to me, those resonate. Either way, the moral of the story is this. Once Wickersham writes this article, it exists. Boom, it's done. The result of this game will be viewed through the lens of that article, inevitably.
Correct.
Right? Because we've never seen a chink in the armor until now. And so, to me, it's very interesting to think about the possibilities dependent on result of the game for the Patriots through the Wickersham article. And we, like, clearly and with good reason on both sides, disagreed, like, if they lose, what will happen? Right? So that's why it's interesting to talk about. And we talk about Brady has so much writing on this game and that storyline. You can go on the opposite side. You can talk about Nick Foles having so much writing on this game because of the storyline. Because, like, we're going to try to trade Nick Foles at the end of the season.
Yeah.
A Super Bowl ring helps.
if he wins the Super Bowl, he plays really, and even if he, and I don't want to say it, but if he plays well, no matter what happens, if he plays well, he is going to have suitors. Like, you're talking maybe Arizona Cardinals, you're talking New York Jets, you're talking, who else, the Buffalo Bills, you're talking Cleveland Browns, you're talking a Denver Broncos, you're talking, depending on what happens with Kirk Cousins too, but you're talking a lot of different teams. QB hungry teams that would love to be able to grab Foles, maybe without giving up a top 10 pick or whatever the case may be, or having to move up in the draft and use all that draft capital, maybe use a second and a third rounder or something like that. But I think he's worth the second rounder at this point. Right. If this is what Alex Smith is fetching in the open market, and I understand that Alex Smith has been a more consistent player, but Alex Smith hasn't won in the playoffs like Nick Foles has done so far. Alex Smith hasn't gotten you to a Super Bowl. That was Kaepernick that did that. But if Nick Foles plays well in the Super Bowl, for sure, man, we're dealing him. And what's great is we have 20 of our 22 starters signed through next year.
I thought it was 21 now.
Is it 21?
I thought Bradham was the only one left. It probably depends on who you define as a starter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So either way, 20 or 21, that's a lot of players. So we don't really have to worry about amassing talent this, you know, this upcoming offseason, which is good because we're in a bit of a cap situation, right? Which, you know, we all trust Howie Roseman to navigate, but it's going to help him a lot more if you are able to trade Foles and then have those draft picks as capital, those cheap players, those cheaper players, and be able to replace talent that way as opposed to having to put it out there with free agent signings and be aggressive with trades and so on and so forth that got us in this situation now where we don't have a lot of picks and we're in this cap situation. You know what I mean? Who do you think, if you were to pick one team, who would you say makes the boldest move for Nick Foles as the landscape is today?
I would say the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, that was the first one I mentioned for a reason.
Right. Arizona's in a spot where, because of the people picking in front of them, they are probably not going to get one of the top four, which is nuts, quarterbacks in this draft available. So you either, one, trade up, or two, you got to start bringing in guys who could potentially start for you, right? Even if they're as bridges and you draft a developmental guy in round two or whatever. You either big trade up or you have to go that route. Now, Arizona could potentially go for the big trade up, sure, if you want to. They do have a new head coach, right? Steve Wilks. And so Wilks is going to choose to whom he ties his the beginning of his franchise, right? Which may turn him off from Foles a little bit. But Foles is still young. Like, it's important to remember, Foles is still 28 or something like that, right? So you can still comfortably say, like, you know, if we believe in this guy, then it's okay to give him, like, a multi-year contract. Foles' best spot for me when I'm looking at him is if I'm in a place where I want a starting competition is where I want Foles. I don't necessarily yet want him where I need a starter, right? Which actually is ideal, because most teams who want a starter are going to draft one, unless you're the Redskins, in which case you're going to let yours walk away and go get a different, worse one. I don't know.
Yeah.
So a lot of teams who are in position to generate competition, right? And so, like, it sounds crazy, a place like Minnesota, which obviously the Eagles' history of quarterbacks with Minnesota is quite deep, but a place like Minnesota is a place where you could potentially see they have interest in bringing in, like, Foles on the relatively cheap, right? Like, not spending a first, spending a second, spending a third, whatever.
But they've had success. They've had success with that too. Like, Keenum played well for him. Bradford played well for him. It was just his health. Right. So yeah, I could see that.
So because they have so many bodies moving around that you bring in a couple of guys and you have a competition and you enter the season with a starter, right? That's why I think the Vikings are very interesting. You said Buffalo. Buffalo is very curious because they desperately want to move away from Tyrod Taylor. Right. Like, because just the name is poison at this point there for the Bills. Do they have the capital, similarly to Arizona, to move up and get their guy early? It would be a pretty penny. Obviously, they had the trade with Kansas City, so they have the firepower to do so. They'd have to pull the trigger if they like one of them. Right. And it's going to be tough to move up into the top because so many of those top teams need a quarterback. And so you're in a situation again where, what? Let's say you're trying to develop Nate Peterman. God bless you. And you need a bridge quarterback. Nick Foles. Right. So that's where I see Nick Foles panning out. When I wrote about trading Nick Foles during the season, I said, like, you know, a third would be swell. You can barter, as long as he doesn't shoot himself in the foot, you can barter that Minnesota game for a second. You should be able to. And if anybody can, it's Howie. I will say this. I do wonder how Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl actually might negatively affect it, because then Philadelphia is not going to want to move on from him. He brought the first Super Bowl to Philly.
You're going to have a crazy contingent.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Which I don't think it's going to be the whole, oh, start him over Wentz. That's bullocks. But it's very tough to have a guy step in for you, bring you through the playoffs, win a Super Bowl against the Patriots, first one of your organization, then turn around and trade him later. Right, exactly. Like that's very, very, I'll say cold or heartless a little bit business, right? Which is tough. You don't necessarily want to do that. And hey, backup quarterbacks are important. We just saw that. If anything reinforces the story, it's that. So maybe if he wins a Super Bowl, Philadelphia keeps him. Who knows? Either way, they will test the market on Foles. Certainly.
What do you think about this? Because the recovery for Carson Wentz is so tied to this. What do you think about keeping Foles in the offseason and then dealing him around the trade deadline? Do you think that would be a possibility, or you kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see the Foles money off the books for the offseason, because he's going to make more than Wentz this offseason if he stays with Philly, simply because Wentz is on that rookie trade.
Yeah, it's only $16 million in the quarterback position between Foles, Wentz, and Sudfeld, which isn't bad. I mean, that's a lot better than a lot of other teams are doing.
It's fantastic for a team that's in the Super Bowl, for God's sakes. Absolutely. But still, like, obviously, I would love to see they be able to get him off the books. But yeah, you know, there's nothing ever wrong with holding onto a quarterback like that and waiting for a team to get an injury with by week four. And then all of a sudden, the trade deadline, they're up against a wall and you have their only lifeboat. Right. So yeah, that's another strong possibility. And I'm sure if they don't deal him before then, that's something we'll talk about at that time.
All right, Ben, what else do we have for the gentle, gentle listeners?
We have a Super Bowl on Sunday, Mike. That's what we have. That's what's important. No, it's been a crazy stuff. The only other thing I can think of as we're wrapping up this episode, we've given some longer episodes to you guys this week, is Timmy Jernigan and Ronald Darby both missed media availability with illness today. However, there's no news that should affect their performance on Sunday. The hope is that that's just super precautionary. Don't get them near any other players. Quarantine them. Make them get healthy. Obviously, we'll learn more about that as it goes along. Gronkowski is officially back from concussion. He's saying stupid things, being politically incorrect during meetings, whatever. I can't handle him. Saturday, we're likely going to take a last loving look back on the season and kind of see how we got here. Obviously, we've done a lot of our breakdown stuff, and we'll continue to break down the game on Saturday as well. However, if you look at the Tuesday and the Thursday episodes, you'll find our two breakdowns with Mark Schofield of Locked On Patriots and Inside the Pylon. Saturday, we're just going to be kind of putting a bow on the whole season and getting ready for the big game, Mike. Big game on Sunday. That's the Super Bowl. But either way, I'm Benjamin Solak on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. That's Mike, at Michael Kist, NFL. As always, please leave a 5-star rating and a review on whatever app you listen to your podcast. We are enjoying the final days of the playoff bump, Mike. We've seen some excellent, excellent listener numbers. We thank you guys for that so much. We do want to reinforce to you so heavily that we do not stop in the offseason. As a matter of fact, we gear up in the offseason. Yeah. Mike and I both have extensive draft backgrounds. We have player personnel backgrounds. We've been doing it for years. And so we're very proud to be giving you excellent, in-depth, and also relevant Philadelphia Eagles coverage in the offseason. So once the Birds win on Sunday, please feel free to stick around. We hope to continue providing you with excellent Eagles content. Thank you so much for listening.
And remember, go to tpublic.com, put Lockdown Eagles in the search bar, get yourself a new We All We Got, We All We Need t-shirt as well. And as always, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Cuckoo!
They get bigger and bigger as we get closer.
I'm so excited.
I have no idea noticing that. The living legend against the scrappy contender. Belichick, Peterson, Patriots, Eagles. For the heavyweight championship of the world.